The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Hot Stocks. It's 9:30. It's a Friday. It is the 3rd of November. I'm joined by Paul Hill. We're a little bit late, a couple of seconds late. Technical issues. It's always fun going live. You're right, Paulie.
Yeah, we were just sort of battling with the sound, weren't we? I was trying to talk and I could hear myself and a testament mic, but you couldn't hear me. So we've managed to solve the technical problem out for 5 minutes.
Yeah, Paul was with this.
I know.
If you're watching on video, by the way, it's a podcast as well, but if you're watching on video, it was like working with a mime artist for a second there. He's not only a full-time investor, equity analyst, he's a mime artist as well. Brilliant stuff. So let's start, before we get into individual stocks, Paul, let's talk about, it's been a big data week. Of course, we've had the Fed, the Bank of England. What's your initial thoughts, fella? I mean, the markets are doing bad. Do you know what? I mean, look, let me just show you this. This is the AIM All share, and it is up 3.62%. It's come a long way down. It's down 47.45%. But nevertheless, we have six sessions. That hasn't happened for months. Months and months and months. I mean, I think it's back in June, maybe, it happened. But what's happening here, Paulie? What's your thoughts?
You're right. It's been a monster week for economic data. We've had the Federal Reserve on Wednesday, we've had the Bank of England Thursday, we've all got the US payrolls today, and also we had the US Treasury indicating to Wall Street how much money it's going to need for the next 3 months. And I'm with you. I actually think this week has been pivotal. And the reason why I say that, particularly in the small caps, and I was watching an interview with Andrew Bailey, who's the chair at the Bank of England last night on the BBC, and his mood music and my interpretation of what he was saying is that he is now on hold. There is very little chance of him going any higher because he was pretty convincing that he thought inflation was coming down on track and he thought it was going to hit about 2.5% by the end of 2024 in 12 months' time, which is the same actually what the markets think for the US and for Europe. So if we have actually got the shadow of sort of the inflation sorted and that war is over, then it means that we're not going higher and it's just a matter of when interest rates. Now, so the economic backdrop is definitely been a major shift this week. But more importantly, sentiment is starting to change. And the reason why I say that is twofold. First of all, is that we've had still an absolute plethora of M&A bids and activities. That says to me is that obviously the overseas guys are picking up, you know, cheap companies or trying to pick up cheap. And what that does, that basically means that if an acquisition goes through, it gives fund managers money to then reinvest into other companies. And it's a very strong indicator of, you know, sort of like undervaluation. And these guys who are professional buyers are not waiting any longer. They realize this really is the sort of the sweet spot. We've reached the bottom in the market. And then I would also say the bank shares and the house builders, which are obviously cyclically, you know, sort of orientated GDP play, they're starting to recover as well, because particularly the bank shares as yields come down. So I think, yes, I think I know this is a real gutsy call. I think we've probably now passed the worst of the small cap sort of market. What's your thought?
I think exactly the same. You know, I've been saying on TikTok. By the way, by all means, you know, a comment. If you want to ask Paul a question or me a question, anything at all, we are live. So, you know, put a comment there and we'll pick that up. But yeah, no, listen, I've been overly bullish. Like I said, I'm trying to call the bottle several times. But I do think, like I said, we are within that area. And I do think we'll have a Santa bounce. And then we'll have maybe worsening economic data. And then I think the central banks then will start easing. They're not going to say that because they don't want everyone to get carried away and all that stuff. But it's going to happen. I mean, even historically, if you look at the AIM All share, it's down now over close to 800 days, you know, from the high. That's quite long. I mean, that is long. That's worse than the Great Financial Crash. I know that could be remedied quite quickly or sort of with central banks putting money in. But I think... Yeah, and what people understand is once you get some momentum, like I say, that AIM All share, 6 days in a row, has been up now, hasn't done that for months, okay, months and months. And once you start to rise, like the money inflow, except, you know, people chase rising prices and they sell falling prices. It's momentum, it builds, money inflow builds. So I think if we can get above certain key levels here, I think you'll start a rally. I've seen, you know, my
now,
stocks.
I'm going to give you a tough question, okay? So given you are sort of positively biased, is this going to be a gradual sort of like 20% gradient line upwards on the AIM, or is it going to be a rocket ship?
No, I think it'll, I don't think people believe it. It's 2 years of hurt in here. So people are not believing it. People are still taking profit.
The wall of worry?
Yeah, it is the wall of worry. But I think you'll still have, you know, it's almost like you need this waves of rally. People will take some profit because they're underwater, a lot of them, if they're still holding. So you'll still get people sort of taking profit now and again. And then they'll start to realize, maybe, hang on, this may be the real deal. This may be the bounce off the bottom. And those initial bounces can be very sharp, very quick, because, of course, you've got sort of selling exhaustion and all you've got is buyers coming in. So that initial rally will be, it may roll over some bad data or something like that, or something bad happening, but then it'll punch back up. So I do think we'll see. I've been saying it for a while that I think people think I was insane. I think we're going to have a Santa rally, or Santa bounce, I think. I've been calling it a Santa bounce because I think it'll roll over a little bit in Q1. And then I think 2024, proper bull market is on. That's what
I think. I think it is important that, you know, we've reached valuation levels for decent quality or very good quality companies, since the overseas buyers are getting interested, or just trade buyers, or and as I say, that is, let's not forget, they're not just buying because it's cheap, but I actually think they're buying because they believe it's the bottom of the market and this is the time to get in. So once that happens, then, you know, the market has got a floor underneath it, and And I think we see it all the same time. I had a classic one, you know, sort of a week ago. It was RWS came out with a trading update. You know, this translation software business.
Yeah.
And it's only trading at about 8x, 9x PE. It went down to about £1.70 on the news. Okay.
Yeah, look at that.
And look at it come back up.
Yeah.
Now that says to me, somebody is assuming there's going to be M&A there. There's going to be, you know, there's a bit of a sniff, because you don't see that bounce to come back up, you know, on a consistency after such a big sell-off, other than, you know, somebody's thinking, actually, we've had so much M&A that maybe we've got, you know, another one coming as well. So, you know,
I've seen many companies sold off. That there, you can see there, RWS, it's good support level, that round about that 228, 230 level. And then it's bounced to that and broke down. That broke down nastily. But it's trying to get back above that. If it does that, it's quite bullish, you know. I mean, you can see that there, the price action there, people sold off, didn't finish at the low. So it almost bumped, you know, like a bit of a cork in water. And then it's gone, you know, a series of sort of lower highs there. So, yeah. I mean, it's a bit early, you know. But I do think right now we have, like I said, you know, very symbolic.
Why is it early?
The bottom of the
bit. Why is it early, Justin?
In so much as we've had, you know, fake rallies before and they haven't come to anything. But now the difference here, like you say, is
that 2 year bear rally.
Bear market sell off, yes. But we haven't been at the stage previously where both central banks, and of course America affects everyone and us locally, our central bank, are now pretty much saying they are still warning on a weak economy. Of course they are. Well, they've done that pretty much. They, you know, they're choking companies pretty much and spending, but they are saying, in so much words, this is the peak, you know. And like I say, if you look at the tabletop mountain scenario, okay, we may walk along the tabletop for a while, but eventually you're gonna go downhill the other side. When is that going to be? So, you know, as far as the markets can, they'll price in as much as they can. So if they are going to start reducing rates, some say the back end of 2024, how soon will the market start pricing that in? You know, how bad is it? How good are the valuations now? And is all the bad, you know, sort of news out there? Because that's the thing, the difference between the economy and the markets. The markets try and price things in as far as they can. And in fact, you know, like I said,
just before we go on that, the economy and the markets are totally different, get it?
Yeah.
But they're also big cap or mega cap and small cap UK, particularly micro cap, are two different as well. Because we've seen this death by a thousand cuts, largely on decreasing liquidity. You've got less sellers coming into the market, and you've had hardly any buyers whatsoever. And those sort of like that deficit of, you know, although we've had fewer sellers, there's still been more than the buyers. And it's that low liquidity that's driven it to artificially low levels, which is hasn't happened in the main markets, in the mega cap or the large cap. And so when it comes to timing, this is consistent with what happened in the great financial crisis. Small caps and micro caps bounce earlier than the large caps because the liquidity has been sucked out the system for such a long time. So you've got to then look at it such that, yes, the market moves faster than the economy, get it, 6 months, 9 months in advance. But actually, small caps move faster than large caps. And in the great financial crisis, that was 6 months as well. And that is why I think, again, this is a brave call, as I said at the start, because we've got so little liquidity, you only need a small amount of extra buying activity over and above the natural selling activity to drive this one higher. And the M&A is telling me as a professional investor that there's more people who serious players who want who've realized the timing. If they leave it any late, then it later, it's gone. The opportunity's gone. And that's why they're basically opening the wallets.
Yeah, no, listen. I agree with you, and we're singing from the same song sheet here. But what I'm saying is, the wider perception is that, you know, it's hard to if people knew it was about the market, everyone would jump in. That's the problem with markets; you can't really tell, you know. And like I said, if you look at the AMOL share, for example, this is a 50-day moving average. It's broken that several times, right, and it's gone lower, and it's not done that yet. Okay, but now what it needs to do, have you noticed these previous bottoms? They've been a sharp uprise, up again, even broke 200-day moving average there back in, when was that, February, big rally there, and come back lower. So we need to see a sustained rise here a little bit for people to believe it, and then more money will come in, more money. But I think the clever, like you said, the smart investors, professional investors, you can see what they're doing by the M&A activity, and that is significant. And in fact, it's symbolic of the bottom of a market. So much going on. So many companies are being acquired and delisting or merging. And I said, these are people saying, we don't care. This is a very good value, and over the next 2-3 years, we'll get good returns on our money from this level. And that's what's happening. And maybe the retail investors will take a while to come around to that because they've been burned, especially in the microcap space, for so long. So it's cry wolf, isn't it? People keep saying, oh, if we keep saying, the bull market started, and we say like every month, you know, after a while, you've said that the last 6 months. I know. So people are going to have to believe it a little bit. But I do think, just seasonality. November, on the 1st November, literally, the market started to rally. It's like, you know, I think even before that. And you realize, you know, October and September are very bad months. Generally, November, December, very good months. And so that may lead into, you know, people start believing it. And like you say, all you need is momentum, money inflow, net demand, and the markets will rally. But we'll see. I mean, that's a good rise in the last 6 days on AIM.
I think the economics and the fundamentals and sentiment are now aligning. And unless we get a major reset on the economic trajectory, i.e. we get another tick up in inflation, which is always possible, or alternatively, we do get a really deep recession, which no economists are predicting for next year. In fact, all the major consensus, you know, economists, if you look at the sort of the JP Morgan sort of surveys, etc., saying we're going to get growth, not massive growth, obviously, in the UK and Europe for next year, but we are going to get growth and in the States. So unless we're all the experts are wrong, then we're going to tick along and we should be okay. So unless we have an extra, you know, a really extraordinary event from outside, which is always possible, then I think we've got a game on. And the importance of that M&A, I mean, we saw it again this week because one of my biggest holding, as we know, Equals, they came out with a statement that they're now doing a strategic review, which will last for about sort of 4 weeks. And there's been a lot of people who have been asking me questions, and I don't know whether we've got...
I was going to ask this, because if you look at they said, they actually said they're looking to, you know, help get shareholder value. And I thought, well, hang on a sec, response to market speculations. There's been great shareholder value created here. During a bear market, okay, it's consolidated a bit at the top here, but this means a great. I mean, I know you bought down here, so you've done fantastically well in this company. So they've created, and through, you know, improving the business massively, the growth has been stellar. And like they said, you can flip that chart upside down for AIM. You know, that was the other way around. So that's been going against the tide. And I thought, if people are complaining about sort of, you know, not getting shareholder value. So what's happening there? Why are they doing this? Because it seems to me it's doing very well. What's the deal? Why are they sort of contacting these bigger companies saying, do you fancy a little bit of us or all of us or what?
Well, that's a great question. Now, this is total guesswork on my behalf, yeah, because I don't know what the actual situation is. But reading between the lines, okay, I mean, let's look at what they actually said. As you say, they've decided to go for this strategic review process. Now, I think the reason why they have is that over the last couple of 2 or 3 months, they've been contacted by a number of interested parties separately. Two of them have been Fleet Court Europe and Madison Dearborn Partners, okay? They're just two of them. Now, what that's meant is the board over the last few weeks has said, okay, our organic growth strategy is going really, really well. But actually, we've got a best-in-class bank grade, you know, sort of technology payments platform, international payments platform that other people might value even higher, and to get that global, to go that reach. And because we've got that we've had the buyer interests, and this is all basically, you know, non-disclosable, non-public, because we've had that interest, we're gonna have a look at a sort of like a wider sort of like, you know, we don't want to sell to the first person who comes to the door. If we are going to sell, let's look at all our options on the table. And then whilst the board has done that, just the very start of that process, it's leaked out and somebody's picked it up and basically posted it. So it's forced their hand because they've had at least two parties over the last few months who have shown interest. They haven't, but let's be clear about this. And I want to underline it. It's my interpretation. I think this is preliminary interest. They haven't put a price on the table. Okay. They've just said exploratory, as in like, you know, the potential, somebody like Fleet Corp and, you know, the financial buyer. So they haven't put a price on the table. So we're still at early stages. And so they've kicked off this 4-week period whereby they're going to give limited information to any interested parties, you know, Fleet Corp and Madison Dearborn. Mm. But Ian, the CEO, and Richard will probably do a management presentation and then get indicative offers first of all, and then they'll basically, if there's any extra due diligence they need to do, then they'll give them a bit of extra information for firm offers by the end of the month. So what we're saying, in my view, and this is again just my guesswork, my interpretation, is that they've had, because they're a top class software platform in international payments, they've had buyer interest even though their organic growth strategy is going, you know, it's going really, really well, particularly from the US, because they can basically then use it as their beachhead into Europe, you know, from the States. And therefore they've kicked off this. They don't want to sell to the first person coming through the door, which makes perfect sense. But I don't think they're that bothered about selling, because I think this is, you know, when you look at it for an investor lens, somebody like myself who's the largest position, and I've been in it for like 3.5 years already. Mm-hmm. I think this is a win-win, because long-term, I think Ian and Richard are going to continue knocking the ball out of the park. I mean, I've got organic growth next year of high teens in like-for-like sales, particularly as they start using that recent Belgian acquisition to launch into Europe and lift and shift the UK platform. So long-term, I think it's a winner if they're not a bought. But short-term, it might well be that strategically wise, you know, somebody, a bigger company, puts a number on it. I mean, you know, it looks to me, as I say, this is a top class company on AIM, growing high teens organic growth, 50% gross margins, dropping through to the bottom line, generating huge amounts of cash, well over £1 million per month in cash it's generating, so much so it can now pay a dividend, or it's going to be planning to pay a dividend by the year end. So on that basis, you know, it's not surprising overseas buyers and financial buyers are cherry picking the top class tech companies. And we've seen it again. I come back to my original observation. We are in a hot M&A market. We've had Sofian this week. We've had a couple of weeks ago, we had On the Market, and we had InStem, mm-hmm. which went this week as well. So
SES, loads of them.
But lots of tech as well.
Yeah.
Because they've got the high organic growth. And this says to me, well, you know, this is in that context, it's not surprising somebody else wants another trophy asset. And one of them is Equals, which does. It's the best in class international payments platform. It's going to do well on itself. But if it gets bought out and somebody, you know, wants to, can use it as a to take, you know, to help their, say, a US customers to get, you know, into, I mean, this wouldn't surprise me if either of those two, the parties which have been named. But again, another one I own, PayPal. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. They want to get into this sort of small, you know, small, medium-sized corporate sort of like international payments. It wouldn't surprise me if they were even interested. So there's lots of people who potentially could have this very attractive asset. But as I come back to investors, this is my interpretation. I haven't spoken to the company. I haven't got any public information. But I'm pretty sure this is a reasonably serious. These are two very credible and serious payments providers. The financial buyer's already got three big investments in international payments, and obviously Fleetcor is a big operator, about $16 billion, doing this in the States and stuff. So they're very credible, very serious. Put this way, I'm delighted. I'm very happy to, and I trust the management team to make the right decision. If it isn't the right price, they're going to continue doing the, you know, the M&A. They're going to continue doing their organic growth strategy. And if it's a real sort of like, you know, a good number, then you know, they'll make the right decision.
Yeah, those are interim results. Look at great figures. Look at growth there. Revenue up 43. Look at the, you know, EBITDA 102. Operating profit from 1.1, and these are, you know, 6 months results. So in fact, Fleetcor, that reminds me, I'm sure they are invested in Zapmap with Good Energy, because the payments across you know, the thing, I'm sure they did, yeah. So because Good Energy owns Zapmap, and the biggest,
yeah, wouldn't surprise me,
charging app. So they're a co-investor in that. So yeah, big into payments and all that stuff. By the way, do you still hold PayPal? Because I sort of saw they have a bit of a bounce yesterday, I think, or something.
Yeah, it was
great. I saw that on CNBC, and they sort of there we are. It's a downtrend, but it's nice to see a bounce. When you see a bounce like that, you think that's got to be a bottom there, you know. It's,
yeah, they came out with Q3 results, okay, and they've had this new CEO, Alex Chris, who's come in from another software company. I can't remember, Intuit, I think he's come from. Mm-hmm. He's only been there for 30 days. Now, what's quite interesting to me is you'd have thought he may have been tempted to kitchen sink these results on any sort of doubt that he had, particularly on the guidance going forward. He hasn't done it. In fact, what they did was they beat expectations in Q3. And they raised expectations for the rest of the year. Now, all that means is that they're going to do about $5 per share for this year, 2023. But next year, they, you know, expectations are at least $5.50. So when you do that, they're still only on a forward PE of around about 10. They've got a very good balance sheet. They generate good returns, and there's still organic growth. And as I say, the complementarity, the thing I like about PayPal is what Wall Street hates about it, which is, you know, the success, or large part of the success of Equals has been enabling the, you know, its business customers to do international payments on that B2B process. Well, PayPal in the States, and particularly around the world, has got an excellent, you know, sort of like connectivity for its payments platform, and has been, over the last few years, has been growing that part of it. It's called Braintree, where it uses its own payment rails to provide services to people like Shopify.
Yeah, it's a white label sort of, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah. And that's been growing. That's been going out gangbuster. And that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not be good margin, maybe not as good as margin as their existing brand, but I love it. And that's been the success of Equals. And that's one of the reasons why I bought it. And anyway, that's going still go well. Their branded checkout is still doing okay. It's sort of mid-single digit growth. And again, this has got high operating leverage, and it's trading at just mispriced to me, unless there's a major, major event. And I just don't see it. And I think the reason why the Wall Street hate it, I love it. I love it for that exact reason. I mean, my fair value of this is between $80 and $90, because you put a 15 times multiple on $5.50, you're going to get around about, you know, just over $80. So, and they're going to have cash as well. It wouldn't be out of this world. It really would not surprise me hugely if PayPal bought Equals, because they want to get into as much as they can, B2B payments. And I don't know whether they do have, you know, sort of like, I mean, the real jewel in the crown for Equals is their sort of best in class own name, multi-currency, IBAN accounts. And, you know, those are just absolutely first rate. And I don't know whether they have them, but if they do have them, they still need international connectivity, particularly in the UK and Europe. So anyway, well, let's wait and see. But I personally think that is mispriced. And I, you know, I've lost money on it. I'm down, 10, 15% since I bought it. But I'm regularly down now. I'm regularly down 50% on stocks. And I tend to buy too early and probably sell too early as well. But if I make money, I'm not whinging about it. I'm very happy about it. So I can't complain.
Yeah. So, I was watching CNBC yesterday, and they were saying that, I think one of the commentators was saying, the CEO was making all the right noises, talking about all the right things, and they liked him and all that stuff. And they said, and one of the guys there said that we could see a nice rally here. It's been oversold for a long time. So,
buying anything?
No, I haven't really. I literally, some of the stocks I've had have been doing very well. I've still got about 30% of cash. I mean, you know, I've had, like yesterday, Destiny Pharma. There's volume in this coming from, I don't know where. It's literally, it's beating its average daily volume every day. And I don't know where that's coming from. There's going to be no TR1 as yet. I don't know whether it's just momentum picking up there. I mean, it's going to be a bit of sell because it's rallied strongly the last few days. But there may be some profit taking. That happens in this market. They say, you know, in a bull market, you get less profit taking because people think everything's going to the moon. Mm. But
extra volume is actually a good sign because it means that, you know, you've got your support becomes resistance, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, good energy is rallying us strongly. So, I mean, I haven't bought anything of late. I mean, oddly, I'm down on my dividend, which is I just held as for ballast, basically, for the thing. But that is bouncing off lows. And this is that it basically holds the 50 biggest yielding stocks in the FTSE 350, pretty much. And it's bounced off there. But like I said, you know, it's I'm not worried about that. It pays about 6% dividend. Yeah. But I haven't bought anything.
I'm now fully invested in my portfolio. I topped up on... on TP Cap. It came out with an inline trading statement. Yeah. This is basically the interdealer broker in the UK, and they've got a real. They're the world's number one for sort of like interest rate derivatives, trading and forex and energy, all the sort of like, you know, your major sort of like currencies and commodities and all this sort of stuff, but over the counter. And they came out with inline trading update. They're trading at a roughly around about less than 6x PE. They pay a 7.5% dividend yield, and they've got this brilliant Parameta Solutions division, which is data, which I think will just be a great winner in the AI platform. And I just think it's something almost as valuable as the London Stock Exchange for sort of like getting AI going forward. And that isn't priced whatsoever. So the shares went. You see that? You see that red dip on it last week? Well, it came down. Yeah. I just couldn't understand that, so I just bought it. So I topped up my holdings. So I did that, and I would say anybody who's a value investor, and if you want to sort of like a counter cyclical play, if we continue to get volatility in the exchange rates and forex and all, which I think we will, and energy markets, then these will be a winner. And on 6x PE with a 7.5% dividend yield and a decent balance and a good balance sheet where they're buying back share, I think it's a no-brainer, to be perfectly honest. So I topped up that one, and then I've also topped up Water Intelligence.
What's that? 1.3 billion, is it? So a TCAP. But by the way, look at the chart on that. It's very nice because it's had a support level here. It broke down, and now a series of higher lows. And it's on that level where it needs, if it breaks above this, that's quite a nice top up there, Paul. You're right on the, could be breaking out soon.
Well, it was just crazy that it went down on a good trading update. But hey, you know, so I did it. I mean, you do earnings, you can get this silly season, can't you? Things move and stuff like that. And then, I mean, who knows on Water Intelligence? These basically do non-invasive leak detection systems, largely in the States, but also they do sewage flood prevention for big water companies in the UK, which is obviously a big growth area, given that all the water companies are allowing sewage to go out whenever they get flood damage, you know, like, like Storm Kieran and Storm Babette. You know, you'd have seen.
Oh, it was a nightmare. That.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you couldn't get lots of flipping sewage going into rivers and reservoirs and into the sea because of it, because the drainage. And these guys, they're positioned to be able to do it. So. I don't know when their next trading update. I suspect it will probably be weak, given what the shares have been doing. But as I say, I hold these as a long term because I think, you know, logically wise, given global warming, these people are going to, you know, their services are going to be more in use, and you know, water is a very valuable asset that people need to look after. So I've topped up. I've got a full position in TCAP in TP ICAP, and I've got a full position in Water Intelligence now, and then I use the balance again about a week or 2 weeks ago. I bought basically UK gilts. I bought 5%. I got 5% interest rate in some tax in my ISA and my SIP, and bought a shed load of UK gilts March 2025. So about 16 months of 5%, which will just I'll just lock in that return. As I say, I don't pay tax on it, and I'll have that funds to redeploy. I can. The spread on it is just minute. It's dead. It's really, really liquid, clearly. And let's just see. You know, I'm very happy just to pick up a coupon on that. So I'm now fully invested. I've got less than 5% cash in my portfolio, which is really just for day to day activities, etc.
I've never bought gilts. I don't know how to do it. Really, I've never looked in.
Get on your phone.
Yeah.
What you do? If you've got, you've got. Who have you got? You got Hargreaves Lansdown or AJ Bell?
I'm at Barclays. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All you do, you just go onto the website and just say, you know, basically how do you buy it? And you might with Barclays actually be able to buy it online. I couldn't with AJ Bell or with Hargreaves Lansdown. And you just ring them up and they just put a phone trade at a price of doing it automated because they can't do it. And then you just say how many you want. And then they buy it straight away, and he comes back with a confirmation very, very quickly because the liquidity is just so deep on it, and the spread is the spreads. I think the spread was about 0.2 or 0.1% between a bid offer, and I just I nailed it. It's a five. I paid about I paid par for a 5% yield until March 2025. Mm-hmm. It's the TR25, which is the ticker. Is that in the March? But yeah,
this is what's that? No, that's two year government bonds. That is.
Yeah, which, yeah. But it was 5% when I bought it. It's a 16 month. The actual gilt, you can't buy that because that's just basically an
instrument.
What the curve is, yeah. But the actual gilt you can buy is the one I bought was the T. It's a TR25. It's called. But you may not.
There we are.
There we go. That's the one I bought. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
There you
cool,
go.
Cool.
That's the one
all
I
right,
bought.
Cool. Cool. So you're fully invested. Is that why you're so bullish?
Yeah. I'm on the market.
Are you bullish because you're fully invested, or you?
Yes,
think
I am. Yeah, I am bullish.
As I say,
I actually think we've had a real pivotal moment this week. Massive, monster week for macro data. You don't know categorically, but I would say there's a very strong possibility that we don't increase interest rates from here on. Inflation is now seem to be coming down. Andrew Bailey was pretty, he was pretty convinced by himself that, you know, inflation is going to continue.
Well, it will, because I mean, even just on a mathematical level, if you look at our last October's monthly print on CPI, it was, you know, most months were around about sort of, I think, 0.5% or 0.3%. Now, last October was 2%. So that sort of drops out anyway. And so it will come down to around about sort of 5%, but even below that, 5%. And of course, we'll have interest rates higher than inflation then. And it's quite a tipping point, that. But
so the macro and now with the M&A is what I think is going to tells me that professional buyers are bringing liquidity into the market, and there's so much M&A going on now is because they believe if they leave it any later they're going to miss the boat, and if that's a red flag to me, it's a green flag saying we're on. And and that's why I said at the start of the week, you know, I have not seen. I think the fundamentals and the sentiment wise is now aligned. Absent as you know, another sort of like, you know, black swan event.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Phil says, give me another year of reduced stock prices any day. Keep the base rate at 5.25 whilst I own Manolet. Historically, 5% rate is a norm. In fact, I did look into that. From 1971 to 2023, the interest rate average is 7.11%. So we're still below that. Although it caused a lot more debt in the system because we've been on 10 years of free money. And so people have been loading up, you know, with mortgages bigger than they can afford, because it's almost the norm, as it's been the norm for a long time. So that was never the norm, though. You know, like I said, 7.11% was the average from that period. Adam says, what do you guys think of small cap fund managers like PMI, which is Premier Miton, it has come off a lot. Well, they all have. They all have, all these asset managers, you know, massively because of redemption stuff. And there is some massive, well, in fact, you're in sort of one, aren't you? Asset Co sort of thing. It has come off a lot and pays a good divvy, but their funds have been historically beaten. But their funds, haven't they historically beaten the market? And Phil says most fund managers don't beat the market. Buying
index. Small caps do. Small caps over the very long term have definitely beaten large caps, so in the right sector. The consistent, I mean, I interview a lot of these guys, okay?
Yeah.
And I would say the consistent message I've been getting, some of them on air, but mostly off air, is that actually, yes, it's been a really brutal time for them because they've had lots of, you know, redemptions. So they've been forced to sell, you know, certain positions which they haven't wanted to. But everyone is optimistic for next year on returns. I've not had anyone over the last 6 months saying they don't believe actually this is going to turn at some point in time. And I believe the timing now is that we're reaching that moment. So when it comes to small caps and the fund managers, I think they're aligned with you and I. You know, they've got an optimistic outlook.
I've got quite a few alerts on these guys, you know, fund managers, asset managers, because I think, you know, they are a barometer to the market. When the market turns, especially the small cap, like Premier Miton and all that, and when it turns, they will rally very strongly. And so, and like I said, it's like the AIM All Share pretty much. You know, quality fund managers there, they will rebound massively.
Any more questions on equals there? Because there was quite a few, I think, coming through.
Simon says short-term gilts effectively equals cash. TN24. He says 4.8% and the money back in March, but can always sell earlier. I treat this as cash. Thanks for your response. Now, did you have some questions from social media on equals or not?
Yeah, well, go on. Yeah, I mean, it was just really just sort of, you know, what people should do, and clearly that's up to them. But as I say, I'm going to just sit tight and let the process flow, because as I say, I think this wouldn't have happened. They don't say it, but this, in my view, this wouldn't have happened unless they've had buyer interest beforehand over the last few months. It's very indicative. I'm sure the interested parties haven't put a number on equals. They haven't submitted that to the board, which is why it's still early days. But if you were a board and you've had at least two parties who have independently come to wanting interest to be able to then put it submit, you'd be remiss to not, you know, to at least give your shareholders the best chance of making a realizing return, even though your organic growth strategy was singing, really.
So how many stocks do you own now, then?
I think I own about, if I include the gilts, I think I own about 17, 18 now. I'd have to count them up, but it's in the teens. It's higher teens now, My portfolio has been battered over the last sort of 6 months. Nearly everything I've bought has gone down with this year. So I haven't, my stock selection has been bad, but it's very often that happens in a bear market. And, you know, I've had a couple of real bombshells as well. So you just got to live through it. It's not a problem. I mean, another one actually I bought, which came out with a relatively inline trading update, is GB Group, and that got sold.
Oh yeah,
this one does ID verification, And location verification, and is should be again another beneficiary of regenerative AI, because there's going to be more cyber criminals who want to use regenerative AI to get round sort of like, you know, banking systems and all this sort of stuff. And these should be, you know, pretty good. And the way I look at that is such that it's an inline statement, but the price is going up because somebody else believes actually there's going to be this is basically another trophy asset. The reputation you need to get into their market is immense, because nobody's going to use these, you know, ID verification services unless you have the credentials to be able to do it and the track record. These guys are one of the very few. There's about four. These being one of them. So there's three others in the world who basically dominate this market. And they're going to do basically, you know, eventually sort of 20-25%. You know, EBIT or EBITDA type margins with lots and lots of cash, and look at the gross margin; it's 69%.
Yeah.
So their Achilles heel recently is that they've had this debt they've got to get through. It's not huge, but it certainly isn't they need to sort it out. It should be coming down by the year end in March. They have a big cash working capital inflow in the last 6 months, so that'll help, no doubt about it. But the share price is rising, in my view, because people are actually saying, actually, this is another trophy asset that could get well bid for because it's a good size. There aren't many of these companies around, like Equals, like RWS. And, you know, somebody's gonna put a number on them.
Yeah. No, it's a huge problem. In fact, it's nice to see that sort of summit, the AI summit in the UK. Mm. And at the moment already you're seeing, and it's been happening, for, you know, it's not, AI is not new, but we've seen these fake sort of celebrities doing stuff. You're thinking, yeah, that's only going to get better. And it can really, the amount of fraud that can be committed by that is phenomenal. You know, and I've seen it recently, I think it was Gordon Ramsay or something, saying he was investing in something and all this, and Jamie Oliver. And you know, if you've got half a brain about you, you know that's not them, but it sort of bloody looks like them, you know, you think. And my parents would have been taken in by that completely, you know, and so it's a huge issue, and it's going to get worse, and it is quite worrying, AI, but in that respect, but it's going to help a lot more. Okay, any other stocks you've been looking at? Or any,
well, yeah,
any,
I mean, just really on healthcare. I mean, you know, I've had the big three stocks I bought this year, big defensives, Roche, Pfizer, and Bristol-Myers. They've all came out with sort of like, you know, profit downgrades over the last sort of month or so, and so the shares have sold off. But again, if anybody's in that time of, you know, position with you know, like I am, then you just got to basically accept it. There are profit warnings out there. They're too big for anybody to acquire. But what is the long-term picture? And I'm happy with all three of them, that their pipeline, their drug development, and for Roche, their diagnostics business is world-class. And in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, it will be totally different. So you've just got to basically stomach the volatility. And these, I mean, I've lost, I don't know, 30%, 25% on Pfizer. I've probably lost 10-15% on Roche and on Bristol-Myers for huge, huge companies with franchises. But you've just got to be broad-shouldered enough and just been able to take that and ride through it, because you don't need to sell, even though they're going through some short-term, you know, problems. But the pipeline is great. So you just got to say, is my fundamental case, you know, sort of broken? And the answer is absolutely not. Even though the technicals are saying this, you know, you should be selling, and I don't believe it. I really, you know, that's where I think the fundamentals absolutely override the sort of like the short term, you know, sort of like what the price is doing, because it's mispriced. I mean, You've got Bristol-Myers, which is trading on 6.5x PE. You've got Pfizer's trading on less than 10x PE, and then you've got Roche on 11x or 11.5x PE. I mean, they're all just too cheap for the pipeline and the economy. You know, basically, they're the upside potential for world class assets. You just got to accept it. These things happen, and you know, it's the way it is.
But you could use the chart as well. Why wouldn't you use fundamentals? And because you know full well, because I'm trying to pair those together as effectively as can. I would make mistakes, of course, but you know, if you see the fundamental, the valuation is very good, it's compelling, all that, but you can see something's going wrong. There's money outflow. There's a big sellers happening. You can't, sometimes I just think, you know, and I've got that. I've done that previously where I literally averaged down in companies and there's, I don't know what's happening. It's just share price is going down. I think it shouldn't be going down. It shouldn't be going down. The valuation is great. They've got growth, but it does. And you realize there's something underlying there. There's net selling going on that you can't control. And I liken this to, you know, putting your board in the water with the currents against you, or your surfboard, where you're trying to surf the wrong way, pretty much, and just turn the board around or wait until the tide goes out or whatever, and the current's with you. And because it's money in, I mean, the charts, I mean, people say, oh, it's hocus pocus. I never do forecasts on charts. You can't do that. Anyone does that, and I see quite a few people on social media doing that, that's rubbish. You can't do that. I mean, you can do it with fundamentals. You can say this should be valued at this level, and so the share price should be there. But you can't forecast where it's going, but you can look where it's been and what's happening trending-wise with the chart. And you say, okay, that is trending down. I'm going to wait until the downtrend stops at least, and then I'm going to take the position. You know,
so, I just haven't got as much faith as you have on charts. I think it's just basically a 50-50, you know, sort of like up or down myself. And yes, you can see it and you can understand it, but I just don't trust it. I think 50% of the time you're right and 50% of the time you're wrong. And it'd be interesting if you do, what next time, or if you know, when you get a chance, do your analysis, and look at it over sort of like, you know, a month going forward, whether your technical analysis tells you the right way or not, and do what your accuracy is. I bet you've never measured your accuracy of charting, have you?
Well, I don't just use charting. That's the thing. I'm not a trainer.
No. Let's stick on charting. Have you ever managed?
I don't know. I never did.
If you do it, I mean, say my hit rate on the fundamentals isn't very good, but it's 62%. Okay, i.e., such that, you know, 62% of mine or 63% of mine go up and 30-odd% go down. So you measure yourself on how accurate you are with your charts, and then come back and then let me know, because I'd be interested.
Yeah, no, but I guess that's what people are getting wrong, though. It's not about charts. If I was a trader, I'd just use charts. I wouldn't do that. So I like business. I see these companies as businesses. I don't see them as stock prices. So I look at the business and I go through many levels of fundamental analysis. Mm. And that starts with, because I'm into small cap, nano cap, micro cap. I look at growth. I look at value. I look at health. I look at efficiency. And then I look at potential. That means going forward forecast. Then I look at momentum. So if that ticks all the boxes on the fundamental side, I will then look at the chart and then say, okay, there's many a chart that companies that look good, I wouldn't even get into. They could look at the uptrend. I wouldn't get into that. They need to raise cash, or you've got no growth, or they're overvalued. That's just because maybe people are jumping on, following the momentum. So top line, fundamentally, is essential.
Okay.
Secondly, momentum is essential.
We're on the same page then with the fundamentals.
Yeah, but you're not reading half the page. Half the page, you should be reading the bottom half.
Yeah,
of the
I know,
page.
But the other bottom half of your reading, okay? I think you've only got a 50% chance of being right, and therefore it's pointless.
I know, but that's not based on fact, is it?
No. So go away, measure your accuracy of your charting, and then let me know whether it's adding anything to your fundamentals on an accuracy.
Of course, it's hugely. I mean,
why?
I've made money. In the last year, I've made money because I spent more time. Listen, I've learned a lot more in the bear market about everything, fundamental analysis and technical analysis. But what I've done recently is not just getting into companies, and I would do this in the bear market, I would have gone into companies based on fundamentals alone. I've not done that now. And I've also, I mean, I look at three areas, okay? And that's what, when, how. I mean, what is the fundamental analysis? You know, when is looking at the charts, and how is how much exposure and portfolio management? And those three sections I look at in great depth and detail. And yeah, I've made money over the last. I mean, if you go back to even 2009, I didn't. You know, largely in the bull market, it was quite easy. But you know, I've done, you know, £32 compound annual growth, and I've taken a massive hit. It would have been better than that, but I've taken a massive hit in the last few years because I didn't pay attention to the charts. I just got carried away with the fundamentals, with the value story, with the bull market. And I would have saved a lot of money if I'd paid more attention to the chart. And I would have been up to, say, 5,000% rather than 3,000%. So, it's money flow. When it comes down to it, it's money flow. If there's a net seller in there, its share price is going to go down. Its share price is about supply and demand. The most accurate way of representing that is the chart. And it doesn't come down. It's no truer form of money flow than that. And so if you ignore that, if you ignore who's actually buying and selling, you're not using a major tool in your investment box. It's just one tool of many you should use. I do believe fundamental, of course, is the most effective tool, the biggest tool. But sometimes you've got to
fine-tune. It's only a useful tool if it's more than 50% correct, Justin. And you're saying, saying it is, and I'm saying it isn't. And that's why.
Okay, look at that, for example, right? I mean, that chart there, that is what is it, Bristol Myers, right?
So what you should do, is over a period, go through a number of charts and measure yourself how accurate you are at predicting going forward how the company's going to do in terms of, you know, basically its share price in the year ahead from your technical, you know, perspective, whatever the timescale you want to look at it. And I'll be fascinated, because if you come away and say to me, I'm 60% correct every time I do a chart analysis, looking at, say, 3 months in advance, then I'd tip my hat and say, yeah, you're doing a great job there, Justin. However you want to measure yourself. All I would say is that
it's not about the chart. I put all the things together. So it's not just about the chart.
I know, but
what I'm saying is it increases your probability. And that's all it is about. Everything's about probability in life. Everything is about probability, okay? Everything.
It doesn't if it's less, if it's 50%
or less.
You refuse
to believe it. But, I mean, Paul, you've taken a hit on many stocks. They're in a massive downtrend. Now, if you just said, wait, hang on a second, that is a huge downtrend, I'll wait. And then you realize, just fine-tuning your entry level. You get your entry level right, your exit. Now, you may, of course, on a valuation basis, you can come back maybe the next few years. But do you want to sit on a paper loss that's painful? That's why I did it for a few years. Or do you want to sort of fine-tune a bit more?
Can we just do the maths, okay? The probabilities. If you're 60, let's just say you're 60%. You and I are 60% on the fundamentals, correct?
But that's a nonsense. It's a nonsensical. Nonsensical.
No, just that's I'm just look hypothetical.
Look at this. It's equals, right? Look at this. Even looking at every chart that's a winner, every company's a winner, right? The share price has to trend up. Okay, that means that 200-day moving average, all it's doing is measuring a trend. Mm. Once it goes above that, okay, you're seeing, and it keeps rising above that, you can see that people are paying higher prices for the share price, and the dips are getting lower. Right, so every winner, the share price has to go above the 200-day moving average. It has to. It cannot. It's impossible. You know, you don't get a winners below the 200-day, and it says really sold off and bounces and it corrects. But it has to go above that. So even looking on that level, you think, okay, well, why not pay attention to companies crossing that or above that?
Well, maybe if you're using the 200-day as your key indicator, and that's what you should measure your over the time period. All I'm saying is that for me, okay, 60% hit rate or 60% plus hit rate on the fundamentals, okay, if I this is me being honest, okay, I think my hit rate on charts would be 50%, okay? So that wouldn't add anything.
But you don't know yet. You think that's right. You have real evidence on your fundamental analysis. You don't have any evidence on the chart. So you can't just say that. You can't just say it could be 90%. You could say 90%. Doesn't matter. You're not basing that on any factual figures. So, you know, I think, well, if you just literally, I mean, you know, look at all the companies.
I've historically tried charts.
Well, I'm going to help you, Paul. I mean,
no,
that,
I, what, I, was no, it, what was no, the, what was I've, the, I've tried the charts. I've tried. I've studied charts, Justin, in my time. I've been doing this for 30 years, and my hit rate is 50%.
And I can't see why you haven't gone in. No, I'm not saying use the charts only. I'm saying your fundamental analysis, it comes to an evaluation point, you think it's compelling upside and all that stuff. And then you just look at it, okay, where is this now? I mean, look at that. You said it was a learning technology a while back. And you said, have a look at that. Still, yeah, it's in a bit of a downtrend. It's trying to rally. That's nowhere near an uptrend. Mm. And in fact, if you want to leave it, I mean, that's a late indicator, 200-day moving average. But you've got to say, when you know it's starting to trend up is when they're literally sellers dry up. So if you think about it logically, what happens when sellers dry up, okay, and then a few buyers come in? There's net demand for the shares. It's gone from being net supply, being oversupplied, to being net demand. And then the basic law of supply and demand is that, you know, if people want to buy stuff and there's not enough supply out there, the price goes up. Simple as that.
Okay, now, let's agree to disagree then on this one.
You can't disagree on that. How can you disagree on that?
I can't.
It's the most basic law of economics, supply and demand.
I'll do the basic laws
of maths. You are arguing with supply and demand. That's it.
No, I'm arguing the basic laws of maths.
No, I know, but you see that. You can't argue with supply and demand. It is, shares, stocks and shares are supply and demand. At one time, there's a certain amount of shares in issue, and there's a certain amount of demand for them.
Yeah.
Isn't there? No, it doesn't say, okay. Isn't there, though? Isn't
there? We're different, Justin.
No,
You're better at this than I am. I'm not.
No, I know. Just answer the questions. Is there, at any point in time, unless they issue more shares, a fixed supply of shares in the market? There is, isn't there? And there's
of course there is.
So if the people holding those shares start dump them in the market and there's not enough demand, the share price will go down. If it's net supply, it's basic. You know, you can't argue the logic there.
Yeah, you can, but hey, let's not go into. We've argued it ad nauseum here, Justin. We agree to disagree. You're passionate about it.
Well, give me one stock of yours that you've bought, right? Like Pfizer, for example, right? I'll tell you then, okay, when I think I would buy this, all right? So where is it? New York Stock Exchange. And I'll let you know when I think I'll buy. Okay,
go back to Equals, right?
In fact, I'll buy one share of every company you own that's gone down on the chart, and we'll see.
If you went back to Equals, tell me whether you would have bought the same time as I bought.
Yeah, well, the Golden Cross there was a massive tell.
Okay. Would you have bought in January in about March, April of 2020?
I was going to buy then.
Would you have bought when I bought in about March or April of 2020?
Well, this is the time. If I'd done the fun, this is not just about charts. Remember, people just think it's all about charts. It's not. It's about both. I wouldn't. If you look at my spreadsheets, they look at the first. Like,
should we move on? I think we're digging ourselves into a hole here.
No, we're not. Growth, value, health, efficiency, and then potential forecast and then momentum. Right now, look at this chart here. This is Equals. Okay, you could say there's great value coming down here, and then it didn't. It did way below 50, and then it broke up there. Okay, and they came back down. Now, what you want to see is a new higher than that. So literally, around at this level. So right, 34 pence, 35 pence, then it breaks 200-day moving average. So if you only stick to that, the 200-day moving average, it broke that, new highs, you should have bought at 31 pence, pretty much. You know, that's when you're bought. And look, that's just a 200-day, it just shows a trend.
And coming back to that one, yeah, if you did it straight on your 200-day, do you think you'd be able to get the volume of shares?
It depends on big. I mean, you're in the microcap space. You're quite a big buyer, so maybe down there you wouldn't have. But again, I wouldn't have gone big in first time. I average in. So
exactly, yes. Your strategy works for you, Justin, and my strategy is not as successful as yours because I'm not.
It
as
is
because I'm not as good. I'm not as good as I'm not as good as you at your charting. Okay, and I'm happy.
Don't give me that rubbish by saying that praise. But listen, you're a very successful investor. What I'm saying is, why not just use the chart as well? Just add it on. You know,
because I don't believe it. Anyway.
It's money supply.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
That's what. Let's move on. The last one. The last one on healthcare, which came out with news, much smaller, is Verici, actually, which I think you owned previously.
Yeah.
They basically have got a big. These guys do leading immunodiagnostics for kidney donors, for transplants, etc. They've got a suite of products they're developing. Tutivia is already out in the market. They're selling. It's taken a bit longer for them to actually, to commercialize that. But the one though, the announcement was the next one, which is Clarava, which again is actually the only test available for patients who are pre-transplant to give doctors a indication of how they should use the immunosuppressants and steroids for the patient once they actually get a transplant to improve success rates, surgery success, and reduce rejection rates. And then, anyway, they're presenting this in a big industry conference out in Philadelphia, where all the major gut players are. You've got Renalytics there as well, actually. I've seen them on social media at this conference. So they're doing the right sort of thing. And most people just treat these as just straight marketing, but actually what it is, it's a major educational platform for doctors and physicians and for leaders and opinion makers in that whole industry. So it's absolutely the right thing to do. And the other thing I think is obviously always positive is that if you spend a lot of time at these events, it's because you actually, you know, the product is good. It's first class because you don't waste your time, you know, investing in all this sort of your energy and your reputation unless it is really good. And the shares are just obviously, you know, they've just been sold off like all small caps. But there's been very little liquidity in it. And my instinct is that, you know, I mean, I've spoken to the CEO, Sarah Barrington, on a number of occasions. She's a really smart cookie. And I would not be surprised at some point somebody puts a number on these and buys them out for their unique technology. I mean, the value, the IPR behind this is just frankly great. They will need to do, you know, a fundraise if they're, you know, still on their own, so probably around about the middle of next year to take them to the next stage. But I actually think that will be not a problem because, you know, they're the IPR they have is great, and I think before then anyway, somebody could well put a number on them.
Yeah, well, listen, I wanted to look at the chart there because you don't believe in charts. But listen, did you see that thing actually? There's been a couple of companies selling off in the kidney space because of Novo Nordics.
Novo Nordisk,
they're testing on kidney, the same kind of drug they test on kidneys now, aren't they? And they're saying that
it's the GLP-1 drugs, which basically are to treat obesity. But they're also because they're designed initially to do diabetes. They obviously help weight reduction, and if they solve the weight problem a patient has, then naturally it will help your kidney because effectively most people who have kidney damage are very overweight.
Yeah,
and therefore, it came out with an indication. But that isn't going to stop these. Obviously Verici do the. Effectively, the kidney transplants. And there are about 300,000 people on the kidney transplant list waiting for surgeries. And just the demand is huge compared to what they can supply. So
Have you seen this company, Novo Nordisk? Wouldn't you like to own a business like that? Where literally you can't supply enough. You know, their main market is America. Huge problem with obesity. And literally, it's the drug works. They are now the leading, you know, manufacturer. Yeah. I mean, it was another company coming up behind them, isn't it? It's not fast yet. Who was the other one?
Eli Lilly. It's Eli Lilly. It's another rocket ship. Novo Nordisk do as Ozempic, I think it's called, and the other one is Mounjaro. And they're both just absolutely.
Literally, there's not enough. There's so many big people in America you can supply this to. They said we can't supply enough. We can't ramp up. But wouldn't you like to have a business where there's just not enough? You know, so much demand, and it's phenomenal. But I mean, every country in the world are shouting out for like a pill where you can just take. It'll keep you slim. But the thing is, it's so effective. They've written have a knock on effect to like beer. And food and all that stuff. It's like that effective. It suppresses your appetite, you know? Phenomenal. Right, so listen, as an experiment, pick one stock that you're down on, and I'll say where we're on the chart. I'll say, okay, this is where I think would be a good level to get in.
Bristol-Myers.
Bristol-Myers, okay. Was it BMY? Is it,
BMY, yeah.
Bristol-Myers. Okay. Oof. Oof. Look at that. Here we are. I'm not going to say anything about that. You can see it sees a lower highs. It's gapped down there massively. So, yes. All right. Okay. I'll put alerts on that and we'll see. Okay. In fact, I'll do another one as well. To get a good percentage level, right? Give me three. So I'll do Bristol-Myers. Anything else?
Yeah, different. Okay. Device? Do Roche. There's another one.
Roche. Okay. Roche, Bristol-Myers, Roche. And this is a working experiment.
Yeah.
Where is Roche? Where's the main listing?
It's Roche, the RO. It's basically out in Zurich, yeah. It's the ROG is the one, I think.
Okay, ROG. Okay. Okay. We'll look at that. ROG. Yeah. Okay. Oh no, it's not that one. It's about liquidity there.
It's about
Anyway, but I'll look at that.
It's about 235, 240 Swiss francs. I think it is.
Okay, Roche. Okay, and that may be
PayPal's the other one. Have a look at PayPal.
Let's do those two, right? Because you said 50%. So I get it wrong on both. I get it wrong right on one.
You got PayPoint there.
PayPal. So you think, So if I get them both right, okay, That'll dispel your
No, it's not. It's not a big enough sample. Measure yourself, okay. and then tell me how much it is in about a couple of months' time.
Well, yeah, I'm fine. I'm making money. You know,
exactly. Months, so, yeah.
Okay, so we'll do PayPal and
anyway, big picture is that you and I are aligned. We're both positive, and I think small caps and micro caps actually.
I always say, you know, it's like a Premiership football team. You know, you get 11 players on there, all different styles, all are very successful, and all have their own ways of doing things. And you can't, you know.
You're David Beckham, and I'm sort of like, you know, Gary Neville. I'm a worker less talented. But you're sort of like more flamboyant, and you're the ultra millionaire with mansions everywhere, mate.
Quickly, let's finish on a few comments there. Alan says, continue on the theme of M&A. Are there any hints you guys take notes regarding potential takeover of a small cap? This is because one of my holdings the other day swapped out a non-exec director for one with significant expertise in M&A. Is this of any significance, or am I just dreaming? There we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that's either an indication that they're going to buy more things if they've got a good, strong balance sheet, but it equally could help them as an advisor side if they've got, you know, they're a trophy asset. So yeah, I would, I wouldn't put huge emphasis on it, but in this environment, yeah. I mean, we're in a hot M&A market. If there's consolidation in the sector, yeah, I wouldn't say they're going to be guaranteed taken over, but yeah, it's an indication, no doubt about it, yeah.
Laconic agrees with you. Charts are great in hindsight, it says. However, after years of trying, I realize Paul's point that any moment in time, you have a 50% chance, not if you marry it with the fundamentals. You know, you're looking at several levels of strong.
Measure yourself, Justin. Let us know.
I will. I'm 5'10", 5'11", I think. Anyway, fundamentals first, chart entry next. Simon says, yes, good start. There we are. Okay, that's pretty much lots of the argument. People can be having a discussion on charts.
Okay, yeah, so there we are. Well, hopefully in a week, in a month's time, we'll have a discussion on another one on equals.
Oh, a Man Group are a good AI momentum fund manager. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, trending. They're big NAI, actually, the Man Group, yeah. No, I mean, I've had a look at them myself. They're quite cheap, actually.
They're one of the companies I bought just after the Great Financial Crash. They did quite well, actually.
They're a hedge fund, basically, who does a lot of AI in there as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bit messy, that. Marvellous stuff. Thanks very much for that. Don't forget, hit that subscribe button for more stuff live on here, the channel. And like, share if you can. And me and Paul will be back in 2 weeks for more arguments. Cheers for that. Speak in a couple of weeks. Cheers, fella. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.